everyone, and welcome back to another week here at the Damage Report with me, Johnny DeRola, and it being Monday and all, Francesca Fiorentini. Francesca, how's it going?
Oh my God, we're back again.
Francesca, your shot and lighting look amazing right now. Did you make some change to it?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, just had a lot of work done over the weekend, okay?
That's probably what it was. But you did get some work done over the weekend with the Bituation Room. What was happening with the Bituation Room this weekend?
Oh my God, thanks for asking. We had a great discussion about the revolving door between the Biden administration and corporate America. And you know, turns out his administration is not as bad as we might have thought, but it's still bad. And it was great. And we talked about, you know, Trump's FUPA and all the other fun stuff. So listen to the Bituation Room podcast, or you know, subscribe on YouTube at Franny Fio, everybody.
Yes, you made a bit of a mistake there. You referred to it as the Biden administration. I think you're putting the credit on the wrong man at this point. But we will be talking about that in Joe Manchin later on. We're gonna be talking, in fact, about a lot today, because if you weren't with us for the pre-show, you may not know, but this show that you think of as an hour of politics in the morning? No, no, you dummy, you're wrong. It's 90 minutes now, at least until I break. So we are gonna be doing our normal hour that we're gonna be breaking just for a sec. First hours for linear, Twitch, YouTube. We're gonna do our first hour, then come back after that and do 30 more minutes on YouTube and on Twitch. So you've got that to look forward to. But why? Why are we making this change after so long of 60 minutes? Why go to 90? Well, we want to give you a nice, smooth, straight line from us to Dr. Rashad Ritchie. Indisputable is coming up in just less than 90 minutes, starting today, starting this morning, starting right after the Damage Report. So we're going to be going until 11:30. And then Indisputable will be here. So lots to look forward to today. Supersized Damage Report, Indisputable as well. Oh, by the way, tonight I'm gonna be on Old School with Ben Mankiewicz and Mark Thompson. So that should be a lot of fun as well. Lots going on, including in the news. Oh, thank you for that. That's very nice of you. I'm gonna be joining it live 10 p.m. Eastern time, 7 p.m. Pacific time. What are we gonna be talking about? I have no idea, but it's gonna be fun. So definitely tune in for that. Let's see, we're gonna be talking about the big money behind the attempts to stop people from voting. We will be continuing yesterday's conversation on the Bituation Room about Trump's FUPA, so that'll be fun. Billionaires are going to space, but not enough of them, and not to the right point in space, which I would define as the center of the sun. But anyway, we're gonna be talking about that. I believe I've found the dumbest tweet ever tweeted. So we're gonna go over that. We're gonna evaluate if I've found it at long last. Little bit of good news for Pride, won't that be fun? And more besides. We got a lot that we're gonna be talking about. So buckle up, everyone. Hold on to your butts, because the news is coming. And along the way, first of all, please hit the like button, share the stream if you haven't already. And then if you want to send us comments, tweets, super chats, all that, we will respond as we go. Now, with all of that said, and much more to say, Francesca, are you ready to launch into this thing?
Let's rock.
Oh, you're super ready, almost Mad Maxian ready. I am not ready, because unfortunately we now have to talk about Joe Manchin. So America, you did this to yourself, and now we're gonna talk about it. Joe Manchin, president, basically, wrote an op-ed over this weekend revealing that he is not going to support the pro-democracy, pro-voting rights bill that the Democrats have already passed in the House. He's not going to be getting rid of the filibuster. He's not gonna be even reforming the filibuster. And all of that's bad. But what's worst is he's gonna lie to you about why. So let's get into the lies, everybody. He had this to say: unfortunately, we now are witnessing that the fundamental right to vote has itself become overtly politicized. I don't know by who, by somebody. Today's debate about how to best protect our right to vote and to hold elections, however, is not about finding common ground, but seeking partisan advantage. Whether it is state laws that seek to needlessly restrict voting, or politicians who ignore the need to secure our elections, partisan policymaking won't instill confidence in our democracy, it will destroy it. So It's overtly politicized. People are seeking partisan advantage. And he gives a few examples. And they were all examples of Republicans trying to destroy democracy.
Yep.
So Joe, like, do you get what you're saying is not what you're saying? Like, they're trying to destroy it. They're seeking partisan advantage. Now you're saying the For the People Act is bad. You're not saying why. You're not saying what about it is bad. You're just holding it up as the same as all of these different bills that Republicans are passing that are actually stopping people from voting. So, like, both sidesing is bad, but both sidesing when you don't even bother to explain how the other side is arguably similar, that seems worse, Francesca.
Yeah, you know what would fix the, like, not securing our elections or partisan gerrymandering and restricting voting rights? The For the People Act, which you're about to say you won't vote for.
Yeah.
What? Like, honestly, we've been so generous with Joe Manchin up until this point, and it is clear he does not have a leg to stand on. He doesn't have an argument. It's just a word cloud that he throws up every morning. He's like, can you make an op-ed out of this? And they're like, yeah, sure, why not? And then they throw it together. And then we're all supposed to be like, how will he come around to the center so that, you know, Biden can really get his agenda? He won't.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll just throw out, I'm not gonna go on a big tangent like I often do, but the center doesn't exist, centrists don't exist. It is not some midpoint between Democrats and Republicans or between progressives and hard right radicals. It is just people that are doing fine and would very much like to continue doing fine. And if you all could not mess with the system that's working for us, that would be great. Could you do that, please? Thank you. But anyway, so after saying it's been overtly politicized and giving examples of Republicans trying to destroy democracy, he goes on to say, as such, I hate any sentence that begins with as such. You can't say as such and not be an a-hole. As such, congressional action on federal voting rights legislation must be the result of both Democrats and Republicans coming together to find a pathway forward. A lot of nonsense words that don't mean anything. Or we risk further dividing and destroying the republic we swore to protect and defend as elected officials. And there's so much wrong with that sentence. So Republicans are trying to destroy everything. I've just listed how. So we need to come together with Republicans. Why would they do that? Oh, but hopefully they should. Because if we don't come together with them, then we risk destroying democracy. It's happening now. Like, you're talking about hypotheticals. They're already passing the bills. The bills have passed in multiple states. And by the way, I think that we rightfully and thankfully a lot of the media have put a lot of attention into the most recent anti-democratic bills that Republicans have passed. But I really want to make sure that everyone knows that it wasn't like everything was cool, and then 3 months ago they started chipping away at voting rights. Things blew before then. They were really, really bad. Now they're worse, but it was already really bad. He is totally blind to all of that. He's totally blind to how it was leading up to 2020. He is totally blind to how it's become worse during the first quarter of 2021. But he says, well, if the Democrats were ever to do literally anything, that's how you destroy democracy. Now, that would be a stupid argument if he actually believed it. But as we've already made clear 1,000 times, he doesn't believe a single word that he is writing in this op-ed.
No, but Joe Manchin, I love that he, like, the like health equivalent, you know, like a surgeon in an operating room, and there's like a patient with just a knife plunge, you know, like 6 inches deep, and they're like, well, you know, if we remove the knife, the patient might bleed more and potentially die. Like, yeah, buddy, but then you sew them up that you're supposed to operate. Well, you know, it'd be a shame. It'd be a shame. And as I'm watching this body die, like, this is the level of like, and cinema echoes the same thing. Well, we can't fix this utterly broken anti-democratic system because we risk the entire thing dying. It's dead. It's going. It's gone. And we know exactly who's doing it. But that is it. Yeah.
And so I want to go a little bit further with your analogy. So
please,
we got this person who is just being stabbed by Republicans. stabbed here, stabbed in the neck, stabbed there. And a couple of Democrats are like, hey, I think we should ban the stabbings. And Joe Manchin's like, hey now, stabbing has become overtly partisan lately. We need to get the stabbers over with us, because if we were to just ban it, well, that would really be dangerous to your blood flow. No, that's not how it works.
Yes, we need bipartisan stab wounds. I think that's important. We come together to keep stabbing, maybe a little less.
Maybe. Anyway, a little bit more from his op-ed. Yes, this process can be frustrating and slow. It will force compromises that are not always ideal, but not always ideal. We're talking about people's ability to vote. But consider the alternative. Do we really want to live in America where one party can dictate and demand everything and anything it wants whenever it wants? I have always said, if I can't go home and explain it, I can't vote for it. And I cannot explain strictly partisan election reform or blowing up the Senate rules to expedite one party's agenda. Okay, so consider the alternative. Do we really want to live in America where one party can dictate and demand everything and anything it wants whenever it wants? So he's saying, if the filibuster wasn't there, then the Democrats could have anything they want whenever they want. Well, sort of. They would still need the majority in a system that is designed to make it as difficult as possible for the Democrats to have the majority in the Senate, even if they represent 51, 55, 58% of the actual population. Right now, though, what we do have, not some hypothetical, some like political philosophy class exercise, is one party can say no to anything they want. That's not a hypothetical. That's what we have right now. That is what you are fighting to continue. And they don't even need the majority to get that. They could have, 38% of the population and still have enough seats in the Senate to block literally anything that they want at this point. So again, what he's saying, like, would be dumb if we believed that he actually believed any of it.
No, I mean, and it is painful, because if and when Democrats lose the Senate, they'll still, the minority of Democratic senators will still represent more people than Republican senators do. As it is now, 50 to 50, Democrats represent, I think it's something like 40 million more Americans. How is that democracy at all? So once again, the Senate is undemocratic, but the Senate rules are even more undemocratic, and the filibuster being one of those many things. And the other thing about this op-ed that got me was the fact that he goes into defending the John Lewis Voting Rights Act as if this, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which restores basically the Voting Rights Act of 65 that was gutted by the Supreme Court in 2013, that somehow that is where we should focus our energy, because that does have a chance of being passed by Republicans in the Senate. No, it doesn't. Oh, Lisa Murkowski's on board. Nobody likes Lisa Murkowski. Lisa Murkowski is like on the outs at this point with the entire Republican Party. And also that voting rights bill is actually different. That is explicitly about discrimination in like the South, essentially. And the For the People Act is far more sweeping. It's broader. It is about gerrymandering and it is about dark money. And so this is what we got to go to, man. Who are the people? And it's not just Manchin. It is other Democrats. And it's not just Sinema, right? It's other Democrats who are sort of using Sinema and Manchin as cover, who also don't want to rein in dark money and campaign finance spending, because otherwise they would not get as much money as they do and might not win re-election.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. His excuse for a lot of this is, well, I mean, look, don't like try to pitch me as being anti-democratic. Sure, I don't want to do any of the stuff the Democrats are doing, but I do have the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which doesn't do 99% of what's in the For the People Act, and all those bills that have passed in Republican legislatures would be allowed to stand. So it doesn't do that, and it can't pass. Because she, like, so Francesca mentioned Lisa Murkowski. The reason she mentioned Lisa Murkowski is Lisa Murkowski is the only Republican that has signed on to it. Like, he says, well, we got 7 votes for the Capitol Commission. You get 1 for this, dude. So he says, don't get rid of the filibuster and don't do the For the People Act. Instead, put this forward to a vote where it will be destroyed and not actually pass. So we will get nothing. We will get absolutely nothing. And by the way, like, really fast. People who do this, who comment on politics, have ups and downs in terms of their optimism for the future. Maybe I'll regret saying this in the future, or maybe I'll change my mind. This is over. Like, this is all done and over. They're gonna make winning in the Electoral College impossible. Like, they're going to be able to do it in enough states where they are gonna make it so difficult to vote that, I mean, before the Democrats needed to have a fairly overwhelming majority. Now it will be an impossible majority. And by the way, even if they do somehow get people to vote against the multitude of voter suppression efforts, they are making it incredibly easy, including in Texas, by the way, to just overturn the election. They will just do that. And by the way, that's on the state level. Like, with the way that the Democrats are blowing this, and Joe Manchin is the single most important part of that, they're gonna have the Senate and they're likely gonna have the House. They're not gonna certify a Democratic win, even if somehow, like in 2024, somehow they win. They're not gonna win. That's a really dark road, but like, that is the road we're on. We can lie about that, and there's things we can do to try to help, but like, I really think we're going into a very, very dark place.
John, you're so pessimistic. Oh my God, I feel like if we just use the secret and just project democracy, we'll get there like Kamala Harris does. Oh no, look, this is what I'm saying, and I name her specifically. She had like an op-ed in the Washington Post, and it's like, ooh, the headline's like, Kamala's ready to fight for voting rights. Really? When? Mm-hmm. Now, can we see it? Have you rolled up to West Virginia? Are you there? Are you guys campaigning? Are you talking to grassroots organizations? Are you trying to primary Joe Manchin in a grassroots way, not in a like, we're gonna swoop in and send some random like out of touch person to primary him? No, like, what are you doing about this, right? And I don't see the fight. And look, one of my favorite characters of the Trump administration is a guy named Walter Schaub, who was the head of the Office of like Ethics, which I didn't know we had an Office of Ethics. And he resigned very early on. It was very funny. And because he was like, this is terrible, you know, Trump is terrible. The guy tweets recently, like, the window to prevent fascism is quickly closing. This, we're talking about a lifelong bureaucrat being like, we got real fascism coming. It's happening very soon, and we need to take this seriously. Mm-hmm. And like, if those kinds of people are sounding the alarm, especially on voting rights and on democracy, what are we doing about it? So again, don't let us not cede this territory to the center, so-called center, to moderates, to liberals. They're not doing enough. Grassroots organizations have always been at the forefront of this. People in the streets, people making calls, like, I am optimistic because I believe in people power, unlike, I mean, I guess Republicans do too, because they're scared of people voting. But it's bleak. I agree with you, John, but I also feel like we need to actually push back and not wait for people like Kamala Harris to do it for us.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I guess to some extent, Joe Manchin is at least a reminder that, like, on this dark path that we're on, the people who have put us there, the people who are not stopping us from continuing down it, are not all Republicans. Some of them are Democrats. Some of them aren't Democrats or Republicans. Some of them might say things that sound good occasionally.
Some of them, like Dianne Feinstein, but forget which party they're on, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Forget it, among other things they forget. Anyway, okay, so we got a couple of videos I want us to respond to, a lot to get to. Thankfully, we do have a 90-minute show now, but I'm a little bit worried that, like, it's gonna feel like, oh, I get to stretch out 90 minutes, but it's still gonna pass really fast. So let's move into some of these videos. Joe Manchin was on with Chris Wallace, and Chris Wallace had a proposal that would arguably get what Joe Manchin wants better than what Joe Manchin is saying. So let's see what that is and how he responds.
And hear me out on this. If you were to keep the idea that maybe you would vote to kill the filibuster, wouldn't that give Republicans an incentive to actually negotiate? Because old Joe Manchin's out there, and who knows what he's going to do. By taking it off the table, haven't you empowered Republicans to be obstructionists?
I don't think so, because we have 7 brave Republicans that continue to vote for what they know is right and the facts as they see them, not worrying about the political consequences. I believe there's a lot more of my Republican colleagues and friends that feel the same way. I'm just hoping they are able to rise to the occasion to defend our country and support our country and make sure that we have a democracy for this republic.
Okay, so really fast, two things. So one, we had seven good Republicans that were like, you only got seven when a mob stormed the building trying to kill you all. You got seven. And I believe we have many more. Well, where were they? Where did you do the vote while they were in the can? Where were they? You can't just hypothesize that they could have been. They didn't vote for it. They didn't, by the way, and neither did Sinema, by the way. And then he said, well, I just hope that they rise to the challenge of protecting democracy. I would prefer that the future of democracy not rest on your hopes, Joe Manchin. How about you do something? As Francesca was saying, like, the future of American democracy should not be based on your hopes or a vision board or The Question or any other metaphysical thing. Vote the right way. Actually act. That would be preferable there.
What I love about Joe Manchin
makes so much sense, by the way. Chris Wallace is totally right. You took it off the table. They don't have to worry about it now. How is that a way to negotiate?
Yeah, what leverage? I mean, you can tell he's just going back to West Virginia and he's gonna punch left. That's all he's gonna do. He's not gonna say that he held any Republican accountable. When? At what point? At what point are you leveraging anything against Republicans? You're not. What I love about Joe Manchin, though, and especially Joe Manchin on television, and just telling all these reporters who for so long also are like, everyone's trying to find the soul of the Republican Party, and is it Liz Cheney, and is it whatever, and like, oh, let's just come together. Like, Joe Manchin is proving, like, no. We're all full of crap. Like, you see this? This is me lying to you months and months and months and months ago. Like, we're full of crap. Stop looking to like the center, cause we literally don't know what we're talking about. We just do things for the donors, not our voters. And I think it's really cute you keep putting me on television, but I'm gonna keep on spinning the same crap to you. And it's sort of an amazing mirror to some mainstream media outlets who again are so obsessed with putting Republicans and like centrist Democrats on as if there is some magical bipartisanship and not one anti-democratic proto-fascist renegade party that is hell bent on minority rule by force if possible.
Yeah. More video. Okay. Is Joe Manchin being naive? Well, first of all, let me spoil that for you. No, he's incredibly corrupt and he's lying to you. But if he actually believed what he says he believes, is he being naive? Let's see.
I'm not being naive. I think he's 100% wrong in trying to block all the good things that we're trying to do for America. We'd be a lot better if we had participation, and we're getting participation. But when it comes time to final vote, I disagree with Leader McConnell on this, and Minority Leader on this issue, that he puts politics before the policies that I think we need for our country. I'm going to continue to keep working with my bipartisan friends, and hopefully we can get more of them.
Okay, so he was teed up there by being reminded that McConnell had said he is laser focused on blocking 100% of the Joe Biden agenda. So, and Joe Manchin just acknowledged he puts politics before policy. Well, first of all, he's not interested in it, not really before. He doesn't want the policies either, but he is just doing this politically. So again, I feel like every time Joe Manchin speaks, he proves why he's wrong, but you end the statement with him still believing an insane, stupid, corrupt thing. It's just, it's incredibly frustrating. He keeps making the argument for why his approach makes no sense, and yet he will keep making it.
I mean, again, this is, look, West Virginia does have a really incredible grassroots, like progressive, movement going on there. I mean, this is a state that has been completely devastated by, you know, like mining and all kinds of just the ways that like they could use green jobs, they could use Medicare for all of those things. And I just think it's a battleground. I think it is a battleground. I'm excited for what happens next and who is gonna unseat this a-hole. But it might take a while. And yes, we will. I really am sad that we can't have nice things in this country and that we can't just get like, what about a Green New Deal and what about Medicare for all? But sadly, it's just basically the right to vote is kind of like where we're at.
Yeah, the most fundamental thing. And the thing is like, look, we can't just wait for virtually anything, because waiting is fine for people like Joe Manchin, but waiting for things like reform to the cost of education, to healthcare, things like that, the people who are suffering while you're waiting don't just, they're not just cool afterward. That's not how it works. But lurking in the background, as I've always said, is it's obviously, as you alluded to with your comment on the Green New Deal, it's the climate crisis. So like, oh well, I mean, we fought all this time and now finally the Democrats are in charge, but it's not good enough. I guess in 4 and 8 years, we'll give it another go. Okay. And we'll be fighting over bullets and water in the desert. That's where we'll be. So that's nope. Fun. That's cool.
But we could go on forever about this, but it's exactly right. Like Joe Manchin, this is a state with the infrastructure bill that do you think we're gonna pass? No, and if they do pass it, it is gonna be like $500 million and literally nothing about climate change. But arguably, a state like West Virginia would disproportionately benefit because of the investment around green jobs, because of the investment around a transition away from fossil fuels, and also investments in education that come along with it, not to mention the families, the American Families Plan. So it is, again, I don't know what Biden's doing. I don't know what Kamala Harris is doing. I don't know why there is not, like, again, just a giant campaign effort within West Virginia itself to get the voters to turn on him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how that's gonna end up working. I mean, I don't know what candidate, because like you'll get a great candidate that theoretically would not only like better represent West Virginia, but would have a much better chance of, like, for instance, a candidate that would actually allow Joe Biden's agenda to have a vote. And if they were to primary him, Joe Biden would campaign against the challenger. He would campaign to protect Joe Manchin. The DNC, the DLC, all of those groups would fight to protect Joe Manchin from the primary.
At this point, you think? At this point, really?
I mean, they don't seem nearly bothered enough by him. Anyway, we have a little bit more on the filibuster. We do have to take our first break though, so stick around. We'll be back in just a few. Okay, everyone. So what else is going on out there? Well, we turn now to a bit of history on the filibuster. A long time ago, Martin Luther King Jr. had this to say about the use of the filibuster.
You have a Congress with a Senate that has a minority of misguided senators who will use the filibuster to keep the majority of people from even voting. They won't let the majority senators vote. And certainly they wouldn't want the majority of people to vote because they know they do not represent the majority of the American people. In fact, they represent in their own states a very small minority.
Okay, so I think, Francesca, that is not only a great bit of history, but it is amazing how little actually changes over the course of a half century plus.
I can't watch that. That is
why.
That is so devastating to hear. Obviously, MLK Jr., whose legacy I think, who if we're alive today, we'd all be like, yeah, see, we've made a lot of progress, and we haven't. And that's really hard to watch because he said that with such clarity. And it's exactly what we've been saying for a long time now. And hey, the more things change, the more they stay the same. But once again, the Senate and the Electoral College are the most anti-democratic bodies and entities in this democracy. We can't even call it a democracy anymore. Mm-hmm. It's over. It done. They're not a democracy, but yeah, wow. Hey, I feel bad. I feel bad that we haven't made more progress on it, but I guess the moral arc of history does bend towards justice, Dr. King, and I hope we can bend it, my God.
Yeah, I guess if it does bend, it bends oh so slowly. And he's totally right. And it's obvious, look, like obviously, a case can be made for the filibuster in some cases, but generally, how has it been used? How will it be used? And fundamentally, like here is one of the core questions that needs to be asked about American politics. Does the majority of the people support the Republican position on virtually any topic? No. No, I'm sure you can find some positions, probably some positions that regretfully the American people side with the Republicans on. But on questions where, in theory, policy could address massive sections of the economy, healthcare, education, the climate, all of that. Mm-hmm. No, they just don't. I know that, you know that, and more fundamentally, the Republican Party and its politicians know that. They know that their agenda is not popular. Their agenda, insofar as they even have an agenda, and for the most part, they don't. It is maintaining the status quo, stopping taxes from ever going up, and stopping money from being spent in a way that will favor the working class. And so, if you have a position, our political position, what I would call now, where they don't have the support of the people in virtually anything, and it is inconceivable that they will ever not have the power to determine if and when anything ever happens, how is that sustainable, honestly? How? And by the way, I know that, like, so right now people are pointing out, okay, you Democrats are now saying the filibuster needs to go. Under Trump, you liked the filibuster. And Trump wanted to get rid of the filibuster before, but now he's in favor of keeping it. So aren't you all being inconsistent? No, I really don't think that we are. Yes, those positions have flipped, but that is such a substance-free view of the positions. The Democrats under Trump had the limited ability via the filibuster to stop the worst excesses of a man who could not garner the support of the majority of the American people. He couldn't. And the Senate that was doing his bidding couldn't support the majority, couldn't garner the support of the majority of people. They were pushing things that were highly unpopular. Now, finally, after multiple electoral wins by the Democrats, they still don't get to actually do anything. The side that is not supported by the American people still has the ability to say no to virtually everything. So a position on the filibuster, absent any consideration of what it's being used for or against, sure, it might seem inconsistent. But if you actually care about democracy from the point of view of whether it's serving the American people, it is a necessity that you change your position on the filibuster based on all of the other insane inequities and systemic issues with our government. So
it's complicated,
but that's my position.
No, it's complicated, but arguably you could also make the argument that the filibuster should exist only when Democrats are in the minority in the Senate. Why? Because I just said Democrats represent 40 million more people, and will, sure, maybe if they have the minority, they might represent 30 million more people, but actually they represent more people in the states that they represent. So arguably they're never necessarily in the minority, and so you should have the filibuster when they are in the minority, right? So that they can balance out the power. But when they're in the majority, then the filibuster doesn't make any sense. You're just giving a smaller minority way more outsized power. Republicans already have far outsized power. They already have minority rule just by virtue of the fact that they represent fewer people in the Senate. Does that make sense?
I like it.
Make sense?
Joe Manchin's head would explode if he said that. But
yeah,
it kind of makes. I mean, look, if you're gonna have two systems where you have the popular vote and the Electoral College, but only the Electoral College actually matters, well, why not balance the system where, sure, if the Democrats lose the Electoral College and they don't get the presidency, but still represent far more Americans, shouldn't they get something, some sort of Democratic consolation prize? I like that. We should think more about that.
I like it.
Anyway, okay, another quick break, see what's going on out there in the audience. But we've got a lot more, thankfully, not having to do with Joe Manchin for the most part, coming up after this. Hey, hello, everybody. Welcome back. Experiments are fun. And transitions are exciting. That's what we're learning today. Anyway, there's a lot of moving pieces, and I get to dwell in ignorance of 98% of them. So anyway, thank you everybody behind the scenes who is working to satisfy so many competing concerns. And with that, let's talk now about who's actually in charge. It might not really be Joe Manchin, it's the people who are paying his checks. So let's talk about this. Who is actually working behind the scenes, organizing to stop you from really being able to vote, really being able to take your political opinions and preferences and translate them into action? Well, we're finding out a lot from Jane Mayer's article in New Yorker. Amazing revelations here. I want to give you a bit of it, but definitely go to the New Yorker and read the thing in its entirety. She says, a recording obtained by the New Yorker of a private conference call on January 8th between a policy advisor to Senator Mitch McConnell and leaders of several prominent conservative groups, including one run by the Koch Brothers Network, reveals the participants worry that the proposed election reforms garner wide support, not just from liberals, but from conservative voters too. So around this time, we'd had a couple of months of the big lie. We're right in the wake of the insurrection, and the Democrats are talking about basically their evolution of HR 1 from previously to be this comprehensive bill to make democracy sort of real in America for once. And they're not liking it, not just for the content of the bill, but the fact that the public is kind of liking it, and not just the libs. The speakers on the call expressed alarm at the broad popularity of the bill's provision calling for more public disclosure about secret political donors. This is my favorite part of this whole thing. The participants conceded that the bill, which would stem the flow of dark money from such political donors as the billionaire oil magnate Charles Koch, was so popular that it wasn't worth trying to mount a public advocacy campaign to shift opinion. Instead, a senior Koch operative said that opponents would be better off ignoring the will of the American voters and trying to kill the bill in Congress, you know, like the standard way that they operate politically. So let's see, they had this concern that when you just present the content of the bill, people were generally supportive, with the most worrisome part being that conservatives were actually as supportive as the general public when they read the neutral description. And so, yeah, that's not really surprising. Conservatives don't necessarily have any interest in uber wealthy people dominating all of politics. They're okay with it when it's fairly explicit, like Donald Trump being president, but that doesn't mean that they want the Koch brothers and other Republican billionaires behind the scenes in a way that can't be tracked or traced, able to buy politicians or influence political outcomes. Unfortunately, that did not lead to any soul searching on the part of these donors about what effect they're having. They don't honestly care about the opinions of the people they consider their base. So they had to come up with a different strategy, Francesca. But these revelations are pretty amazing. It's regretful that unfortunately the vast majority of people won't ever hear about this, but I think it's pretty amazing.
Well, and this is sort of where you understand that, you know, when we talk about, you know, Manchin running cover for corporate Dems, that you know that Trump and Trumpism runs cover for corporate Republicans, which include Trumpers, of course. But his false populist brand, in which he talked about draining the swamp and, you know, he even had initially some ideas to, like, you know, prevent a revolving door in Congress, you know, or like limit the amount that, like, you know, Congress people can, like, you know, trade on the stock market. Like, there was early discussions of reining in sort of the white collar crime that went on in DC, and that was obviously thrown out. But you understand that actually that appeal, the populist appeal, which is, yeah, our political system is just completely awash in big donor, big corporate fossil fuel money. It's drenched in it, and people are tired of that. This is what they pay for, though. The Koch brothers and all these dark money groups, and a lot of them, again, are big far right extremist fossil fuel billionaires, right? You got the Mercers who ran Breitbart, etc. They pay to stall Congress. This is what they paid for throughout the Obama years, and they got what they paid for, and they're doing it again. And so you see that Trump came along and was like, everyone's corrupt, and that actually resonated with people. Now, the racism and the bigotry and the xenophobia also did. That's the problem. That's where I can't be like, no, we gotta join forces. No, F that, I'm not joining forces. But there is a window there if Democrats actually became the party of the people, and what we saw Bernie Sanders and what we see the squad doing, which is actually taking up this mantle, this true populist mantle of saying, yes, we need to take on dark money head on. We need to stop being naive about what the other side is willing to do. I'm getting very heated on a Monday morning,
Yeah, you're totally right. He ran on both of those things, but the joke was on his voters. He didn't actually care about one of the main things, and the corruption, the ability to buy politicians. He would talk about how it needs to stop, and then brag about the fact that he's done it. It didn't bother them for some reason,
and didn't do it.
No, really, really fast. And then didn't do anything about it. Even though at the time, some people who should know better were like, well, maybe he'll actually be more liberal. Nope. And that was stupid to think. Anyway, okay. So really fast. This is the most 2021 part of this story. So all these rich people, their advocacy groups, their researchers and all that discover that this bill is gonna be really popular and they need to sink it. So how are they gonna try to sink it? Well, exactly as you'd think if you've been paying attention to politics and right-wing media. So this is coming from one of the research directors for the group Stand Together, Koch run advocacy group, Kyle McKenzie. So McKenzie explained that the Koch founded group had invested substantial resources to see if we could find any message that would activate and persuade conservatives on this issue to turn them against the For the People Act. He related that an AOC message we tested, one claiming that the bill might help Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez achieve her goal of holding people in the Trump administration accountable by identifying big donors, helped somewhat with conservatives. But McKenzie admitted that the link was tenuous, since what she means by this is unclear. Sadly, not even attaching the phrase cancel culture to the bill by portraying it as silencing conservative voices had worked. It really ranked at the bottom, McKenzie said. And that's all they have. That's all it is. Just portray everything as silencing those poor billionaires who just want to have some speech for once. When is someone gonna give them a hearing?
I love to imagine all the things that they did. They like put Mr. Potato Head, but like gave him genitalia this time. And we're like, hell yeah, Mr. Potato Head says, you know, we hate the For the People Act. Big old potato, you know what I'm saying? Boom. And like the test group was like, yeah, don't like that. I still want to vote. I still think that it should be easy to vote. What?
Yeah.
What else you got? They're like, well.
Ugh. Okay, so we're gonna take another short break. Still gonna hang in this, but we got something fun for you. You've heard a reference to, it happens very rarely on TDR, to a FUPA. And we're gonna talk about it actually when we come back from this. Okay, everyone, so let's have a bit of fun. Over the weekend, the weirdest news ever broke, and that was that, oh my God, did Donald Trump take to the stage wearing his pants backward? Very quickly, pictures were circulating on the internet claiming that they were in fact backward. And this was one of his first public appearances. Maybe he's like all of us. Maybe he hasn't worn pants during the pandemic, and so he doesn't remember how they work. And let's see, tabloid news publications like TMZ and Metro showed zoomed in videos of his crotch area, which don't ever do that. But we're gonna do it. You know what? We're gonna do it. So let's show you a little bit of one of the videos that was going around.
Yeah, thank you. Wow, Mr. President, thank you so much. You know, and go back to 2016. I was in a 17-way race and won that primary and got here. I was a business guy.
Oh, you almost came back from that video to my gaping bloody eye sockets. Anyway, here is the thing. That's funny. That's one of the things. People shared tweets like this from Glenn Chisholm showing same energy, which is pretty funny. You gotta admit, that's pretty funny. But here is the thing. It's not true. It's not true. It didn't actually happen. The video was manipulated. And while it was fun, and I think we need to have fun, Francesca, I'm really mad at people who produce things
like that. Am I wrong? It was manipulated?
Yep.
Are we being manipulated? I did a whole segment on my show about this.
We are being manipulated, but here's the thing. It looks real. That's why people were manipulated.
I love how we're doing like FUPA deepfakes now. Like, we were like, oh, deepfakes are gonna ruin democracy. It's gonna change everything. I was like, no, we're just gonna give Trump a big old FUPA and make him look stupid. Like,
did you assume it was an adult diaper? Is that, I assume that was your assumption.
Well, first of all, hashtag show me the undies. Let's get it going in the chat, people. Never die, never die. Come back in his reelection campaign. I want him to just, you know, pull him out like in 16 candles. Just show us the undies. But no, I thought that he just forgot how to sort of tuck in the you know, FUPA. Everyone's got FUPA, it's fine. You know, no shame in that. But you know, he just forgot where to tuck the pants. Usually it's under, and then his heels make him, you know, eject himself forward. So he just kind of like, he can hide it. But yeah, that is kind of an easy Photoshop job, isn't it?
Unfortunately, I mean, the fact that it's video makes it a little bit more difficult. That's
why some people were. Yeah, but a moving picture. In my brain, see moving picture.
I know. Well, let's prove it to people. So here is an actual image from Getty, and so here is the thing. Like is often the case, reality is less interesting, but more real, you know, than that. So no, he did not have his pants on backwards. That said, as is alluded to in the title of this stream, they're still really weird. Can we bring up that image? Those are the most wrinkled pants that I think I've ever seen. And he is a billionaire president. Can we show that? It's the zipper's there. They're not on backwards. But the reason people are so weirded out is, why would the front thighs of your pants be that wrinkled? What would have to happen to produce that?
No, he sat on the plane. He sat on, and then he sat on the tarmac for 3 hours, making them wait for his big return, right? Because he's supposed to go on at 5, then he went on at 8 or whatever, and it was terrible. Not even Fox News covered it. I mean, that to me was the biggest story of this. It was like, not even mommy and daddy want to air your speech anymore. Uh-oh. Yeah,
they're traitors. But here is the point that I want to make about this.
Yes.
So it don't fake stuff like this, honestly. Like, I'm sure that the person who faked it is someone who doesn't like Trump, wants him to look bad or whatever. But you, in doing that, you make us look as bad as them when you fake stuff like that, because they eat it up. Now, we're not the same, you know, like if we get fooled by somebody like this, we feel bad because we want our opinions and commentary to be reflective of reality. They don't care if the whole thing is faked, but I don't want everything to become whatever we want it to be. And you know, everybody who's bad is bad, not just for the reasons they're actually bad, but whatever makes me feel good about them being bad or ridiculous or whatever. I want us, at least, even if only us, to be tethered to reality just a little bit. And people who like that, who make videos like this and spread them to go viral or get retweets or likes or whatever, like, yeah, you got your retweets, but there was just a little bit more chipping away at the last remnant of concern for truth. And I know it's stupid to care about truth when it comes to a dude's crotch or whatever, but it is something. You train people to prefer a convenient, happy, warm lie to boring, complicated reality. And just stop doing
it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And shame all the real FUPAs out there. Hashtag real FUPA. Hashtag no deep fake FUPA. And yeah, I'm not as I think it's fun to see where John gets upset. I'm just upset because I covered it like it was real.
But that's the thing. It was easy to believe that it was real. And the fact that you pulled one over on Francesca, you random memer, that makes me even madder.
I'll get you next time.
Exactly. Okay, really fast. We're gonna take one last little micro break. When we come back, we're gonna be talking about cyber attacks and how to avoid them after this. The US has been hit by some pretty high profile cyber attacks recently. Well, Joe Biden's off doing his thing about it. What does the former president think should be done?
Well, that's here to stay, according to the Commerce Secretary. How do we stop it? I mean, the Commerce Secretary says, well, the companies should take action.
Go back to a much more old fashioned form of accounting and things. You know, I have a son who's so good with computers. He's a young person, and I mean, he can make these things sing. And when you put everything on internet and on all of these machines, you never see a piece of paper. I really think you have to go back to a different form of accounting, a different form of compiling information, because anybody can break in. I mean, I see young people, they can't walk without computers. That what they can do with them is incredible. I'm witness to it because as a young person, my 15-year-old son is, you know, he's just a genius with this stuff. And you have people that are going to break into systems. I think you have to go back and you have to be much more reliant. There has to be much better security. And the kind of information they're getting is mind-boggling.
Okay, so he just basically said, let's go back to scribbling on paper. And Stuart Varney's only concern is, but that takes time. And that was the biggest pushback he gave in that entire interview with Donald Trump, was it takes too long to go back to paper, which you can then make sing.
First of all, I love that Trump is not able to name his son. multiple times. I have
he did get the age right.
Which one? 15. But now we know that like Covfefe was an inside job. That was a Barron hit right there. Like Barron's been hacking his dad's phone like for years now. You guys realize it. They do amazing things. Once I couldn't get in because, you know, the facial ID was changed. But like,
it doesn't.
So old man on porch at the end of the bar tells you another story about his son, which is just, he's just watching him do TikTok. That's all he's doing.
No, totally. He saw like this, he saw Barron Floss and he was like, that kid can really make tech sing. Yeah, no, that's not how it works. That's not how
have
any
you heard
of
the emoji? The emoji and it moves.
Yeah.
Amazing things. I think emoji were moving.
Break. We unfortunately have a hard out, but we got more coming.
For the love
I know,
of God,
I'm sorry,
I'm
doing a bit. It's a hard out, so I've really got to go. So anyway, we got 30 more minutes coming up. It's not on linear, but it is on YouTube and on Twitch. So definitely stay tuned. We're gonna take a short break and more after this. Welcome back, everyone, to the new third bit of the show. How's it going, Francesca? Thank you for still being with us.
Oh, I'm still here. Oh man,
you are.
Yeah, I do.
Oh no, did you not know that your camera was still on?
No, I was just hanging. I was like doing another thing.
Okay. Well, we got a lot more news, so let's jump into it, okay? We're not gonna give you much of Donald Trump's most recent speech. Suffice to say, even Fox didn't feel like playing much of it. That said, I do want you to know what's going on there. So very briefly, was he going to broach the big lie? Oh yes, he was going to bring up the big lie. And here it was.
That election will go down as the crime of the century, and our country is being destroyed by people who perhaps have no right to destroy it.
Hey, I kind of like that he said there they perhaps have no right to destroy it. He's leaving the possibility that Joe Biden is the legitimate president there. But anyway, yeah, he goes on at length during that speech. We're going to continue to track them and see what he's saying so that people know, because I think that's important. That said, playing it in its entirety doesn't necessarily seem like the best thing, Francesca. I don't know. What did you have? What did you expect for his first address? You know, pants aside.
I mean, this. I think it was just sort of like a, you know, playing the hits, but in slower motion, just a little more tired. You know, and yeah, I'm surprised that actually neither Fox nor CNN even aired much of it at all. What I will say though is, when you see the ways that the Republican Party is all coalescing to make voting rights and voting so much harder after we elected the radical Joe Biden. Oh my God, the extreme Marxist socialist president. Obviously I'm joking, but, and then you see Trump and you're like, oh my God, like we said before, this man is the perfect vessel for their anti-democratic crusade. And he's always been the perfect vessel, right? But he's even more perfect now because he lost the election. And he is such a fragile, fragile man that he doesn't care that he's being used for this sort of like broader rollback of democratic rights. He just cares that he doesn't look like he lost legitimately. He wants to completely contest it forever and ever and ever. And Republicans like Mitch McConnell and others are like, oh, this is amazing. And all the Koch brothers and all the dark money groups are like, oh no. We don't need this to work in the, you know, in like, we don't need this to A/B test well. We just have Trump saying that it's all illegitimate and people love Trump. This is brilliant. Yeah. This is something they couldn't have done, but now he's doing it for him and his ego is doing it for them.
Yeah. So he's out there saying it. They definitely seem to occasionally become uncomfortable about some of the specifics. Like last week when he was going around telling people apparently in his private life that in August he'd be president again because the pillow guy said it. Like a Newsmax guy went on Twitter and he was like, stop saying that Trump is telling people that. Nobody believes it, even though Trump was totally telling people that. Like he didn't like it. And in fact, I want to play this next video where he's going on at length a little bit about the big lie, but he's combining it with the pandemic. And I want you to watch Stuart Varney as this interview is going on and how uncomfortable Stuart Varney gets at some of the specifics that Donald Trump brings up. Let's watch.
Things we are
in a position, a lot of people that have had COVID, and, you know, I think you had reported numbers far greater than the actual numbers. A person that I know just told me his father died. I said, oh, that's too bad. What happened? It was a heart attack, but they put down COVID. And I said, what do you mean it was a heart attack? Did he have COVID? No, he didn't have COVID. They put down COVID. So many deaths are reported. This whole thing is whether it was election fraud or other frauds. But, you know, there are many, many more cases than if you take a look. And I'm sure you've heard this. You're a professional, to put it mildly. But this was just an interesting conversation I had with somebody that I, frankly, that I barely know. And they said it was COVID. But I've heard that many times before. Many, many times before.
Is it over in America now?
Okay, so when he said about the heart thing, like Stuart Varney shifted a little bit. When he said that you're more than professional, he goes, like, he didn't seem to like the compliment from Trump. But then after all that, where the president just said that they're making it up, whether it's election fraud or for some other reason, but they're definitely making it up. They're taking people who died of heart attacks that didn't even have COVID and lying that they had COVID. Former president, yeah. He just said all that. Stuart Varney, Trump finishes talking. Stuart Varney says, is it over? No follow up. He's got nothing. He was just told he's more than professional. The former president lobs a grenade like they lied about heart attacks to make the pandemic seem bad. And Stuart Varney's like, well, I'm not going to stop. I already thought I knew what I wanted to ask, so I'm just going to do that instead.
Well, one interesting thing that came out of the rally that he, in the speech that he gave the other day, is that he actually, once again, as we said, tried to take credit for the vaccine, won't encourage people to get vaccinated, but was basically like, you'd all be dead here. And that would have been fine for me. I was trying to kill you anyway, but you'd all be dead if it weren't for me. He basically said that to the audience. I just want to say though, like, is someone whose uncle died of COVID, but died of a stroke while on a ventilator, hearing the former president repeat this lie and hearing a lot of right wingers, anti-vaxxers repeat this lie is really painful and really effing upsetting. Like, there, yeah, it affects your cardiovascular, it affects your lungs, it affects your heart, it affects everything. The person had COVID and then died in a hospital of cardiac arrest. The root of it, COVID.
Yep.
So that we're still being gaslit about this, and it's not just Trump, it's all right wing media. It is people that you're gonna be talking to as we're vaccinated and like, oh my God, maybe I shouldn't be talking to you. Go away, run. It stings and it's upsetting that he can, that you'll still get away with saying that, and Stuart Varney at this point won't even fact check that. No, that won't even be a point.
Yeah, it's good to have the president on, but any of the stuff that in theory about the you know, the big lie that might lead to lawsuits, just let Trump say it. Don't have any of your hosts endorse it, but it's convenient to have your base believe it. Ugh. Anyway, you know what? I'm done with him. I'm fine. He said other crazy stuff. I'm sick of it. Anyway, let's move on to our next story. Let's do that. Jeff Bezos is going to space, but unfortunately then he's gonna come back. He announced on Monday that he will launch into space on the 20th of July from Texas, along with his firefighter brother Mark. Also making the 10-minute up and down hop will be the highest bidder in a charity auction. It's gonna be something like $2.8 million currently for the seat on it. And Jeff Bezos said of his trip, let's see, I wanted to go on this flight because it's a thing I've wanted to do all my life. It's an adventure. It's a big deal for me. To see the Earth from space, it changes you. It changes your relationship with this planet, with humanity. It's one Earth. Yeah. Okay. So Francesca, what do you think about his view will change, and what do you think will probably get through the trip without changing?
Go to space, be a hero, you know, like Bruce Willis in Armageddon. And then we can just be like, I don't wanna close my eyes. I just wanna watch you go into the core of an asteroid, and I don't want you to come back. Okay, I'm done. But that's all I want. There we go. See, just bye. We're all waving bye. There he goes. I want billionaires to, I want them to go to space. I don't want them to come back. This is where I have a problem. Also, Anna and I did a story on the main show a week ago about how, or maybe I did. I do this story. I think I might have done this story on TDR. You know, my brain. About how basically Bezos got money from the government to do this, to do Blue Origin.
Yeah, he did. It's just like the idea that, look, I have perhaps a slightly different position on some of the space stuff than some others. I do think that it has a value. I think it's important for developing technology, inspiring people, blah, blah. I think it has a lot of value. For individual billionaires though, I don't care about his dream to see space. I'm not interested in what Elon Musk has to say about virtually any of this. Like, you could do good here now. Maybe you, like me, grew up watching Star Trek and Star Wars and were inspired by it. But like, if you were, like, you didn't draw the right lessons from it. It's not just about going to space in Star Trek. It's about making people's lives better, helping them to live the best life possible. And because you are obscenely wealthy, you have that ability already. We don't need to go to Mars. Like, if Jeff Bezos thought, it's all one humanity, man, it's all one Earth, don't treat the humans that work for you like absolute crap. How about that? And I don't think it takes a trip into the lower atmosphere, you know, to get that idea. And he's gonna go and he's gonna give some speech and it's not gonna change. He's not gonna have a different view. He is still going to be concerned first, foremost, and only with increasing the amount of money that he has. He is addicted to wealth that is inconsistent with the sort of cosmopolitan, bohemian, everything's unified thing that he wants you to believe about him. No, he's a capitalist who is addicted to ever increasing, although pointless in terms of changing his life, sums of money. That's it. That's how it was before he gets onto the ship. That's what it'll be like when he steps off.
Are you gonna go to this quote? Cause I really like this quote that
what,
he.
What quote?
About seeing Earth.
You have to read it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. He says, to see Earth from space, it changes you. It changes your relationship with this planet, with humanity. It's one Earth. Yeah, if there's one thing that a megalomaniacal billionaire needs, it's to see the planet that they already largely control through, you know, monopolistic practices and laying waste to it from like a farther distance, you know? You know, like, I just love the scene from Men in Black where you can just hold the Earth in your hand like a little marble and I just wanna, like, you know, wheel it around the palm of my hand like a villain, you know? And while I'm at it, why don't I just capture the moon like in Despicable Me? Like, you know, this is the level.
I haven't seen that one, but yeah.
You haven't seen Despicable Me?
No. Should. Yes. So I like the way that you're thinking about this. Yes. So, you know, seeing the Earth entirely, seeing that there's indeed no borders between nations, all that pale blue dot stuff is all true. And you could view the Earth like that from space. Some of us, I think, are capable of feeling that way without the space thing. But for him, it's control, it's privilege, being one of only a few people to ever do a thing purely by virtue of your ability to buy it. He's just gonna be more disconnected from regular humans than he is right now by virtue of distance.
He's gonna totally take that picture where it's like something small that's big in the distance, and he's gonna be like, squeak, squeak, oh, that's me owning Earth. I owe Earth. Oh, look, I owe Earth.
If he was up there and had a box with a button on it, and the button blew up the Earth, would you be comfortable with him having that box? I would not. I would not.
You just leapt my hypothetical. I was very squarely in the realm of possible. But actually, John, and this is a, you know, you're a climate guy. Hey, you want to survive? there is a theory that actually, when humans saw Earth from space and from the moon, that actually it changed our view of ourselves, not for the good. Not for like, wow, isn't that a beautiful planet? But a little bit for the like, wow, couldn't we just dominate that little thing that we see there? That like, it actually gives people more of a sense of dominance and less of a sense of, wow, I'm part of something really big and really wondrous. That's an interesting theory. We should talk about it offline.
Yeah, we should. We should. But let's talk about something that is online first. Man, that 30 minutes blows by fast too. Okay, we're gonna expand to 3 hours starting tomorrow. But for now, let's move into this next story. I believe that I happened across the dumbest tweet, at least in recent history, on Twitter. And it was when I was regrettably reading the feed of one Representative Lauren Boebert, who retweeted what we're about to show you. Now, understand she is a congresswoman who chose to retweet this from Mike Yoder, who has thousands of followers. And in fact, this got thousands of retweets. Be sure to wear your sunglasses today so others are protected from the sun. Do you get what he's doing there? That's clever, because he's like, that's what the mask thing is. They want me to wear the mask to protect other people from a thing. So I have an analogy. I looked up analogy and this is what it is. Be sure to wear your sunglasses today so others are protected from the sun. Now look, is in a certain definition this a rando on Twitter? Yes. However, like I said, this had thousands of retweets and tons of comments of people who couldn't love it more. And then there were people who added on because they were so inspired by the comedic wit and genius. Free the Smile said, wear sunscreen so others don't get sunburned. Press Jim Eagle says, be sure to wear your seatbelt so others feel safe driving.
That's exactly what you should do.
Well, okay, yes, just, to some extent, just, if you die in the car. Okay,
just
go on.
Stop there, though. Just stop there. That's the whole point of wearing. That's why it is. That's why it's illegal to not wear the seatbelt. So you and others, if someone hits you. What the point? This is the point.
Yeah. Well, look, a case can be made. People say that one of the reasons people on motorcycles are required to wear helmets that cover their eyes, or at least eye protection, is so that they don't lose their vision and then hit something. So again, his analogy isn't even a particularly good one, but it gets even worse. Because IMHO Allen says, don't forget the condom. But no, first of all, that's not even the format of the dumb joke that they're doing. But yeah, no, the condom's not just about protecting you. It is about the other person.
Yes.
What part of condoms
are sex? Be sure to wear your condoms so others are protected from your little. You're just weensiest little Mr. Potato Head junk.
Condom actually is like the mask, because it fell apart in like 5 minutes. Your stupid joke, which never made any sense, fell up. Yes, the condom is intended to protect another person like the mask is. You potentially have the virus. You potentially breathe it out. The mask protects other people. That's not, I almost said it's not complicated. Maybe it is. Maybe it is. Maybe like 15 months into this pandemic, people still don't get that they might endanger other people. Free the Smiles went on to say, wear bug spray to prevent illnesses from mosquitoes and others. Well, look, you very carefully chose a reference there, mosquitoes. I assume you're talking about malaria, which isn't communicable via respiration. So, but the thing is, other viruses and diseases are. And they loved it. They loved it. Thousands of retweets. There are also a congresswoman retweeted that. I don't know what she believes about masks or about COVID, but she does think that that guy is more reputable than a Dr. Fauci or a Dr. Birx or any of them. Any other thoughts?
Just give the vaccine to other countries. I know we're starting that. Give more of it. We don't deserve it. How much science was wasted on this like worm-brained population of Americans? I'm sorry, if you're watching from another country and your country's having a trouble getting the vaccine, I apologize, man. You deserve that 10 times more because I'm assuming a lot of these people are in the United States.
We are
so not deserving. You should have to show your Twitter timeline and what you've retweeted to get a vaccine.
Yeah. Okay, really fast. I wanted to give some good news. Let's give some good news. We only have like 3 minutes for this, but here is a bit of good news. Virtually all of the news since Pride began has been Republicans attacking members of the LGBTQ+ community. That continues, but there are good people out there too. So I want to talk about what happened with a bake shop. So this is Confections in East Texas. Said it had suffered a backlash after posting a photo on the 2nd of June of a rainbow decorated cookie in the shape of a heart. But that's not the good news. There's bad news, then good news. So they had posted this: more love, less hate, happy pride to all our LGBTQ friends. All lovers of cookies and happiness are welcome here. And you see some brilliantly, beautifully decorated, colorful rainbow cookies. Well, apparently some bad people didn't like that, because they later posted, "Today has been hard, really hard. We lost a significant amount of followers because of a rainbow heart cookie we posted. We received a very hateful message on our business page canceling a large order of summer themed cookies after they'd already decorated them. My heart is heavy. Honestly, I never thought a post that literally said more love, less hate would result in this kind of backlash to a very small business that is struggling to stay afloat and spread a little cheer through baked goods." So that's the bad. But then the good: after that post, people rallied to buy cookies and to support them and to show support for them for what they did. And then 2 days later, they posted this, a photo of a line wrapping around the block there saying, "We're overwhelmed. This was taken around noon today and sent to us by a sweet customer. Thank you." And later they put this photo up of their rack of cookies, free of cookies, because people bought all of their cookies.
Yes.
I love that. That's beautiful.
Yeah, that is the heartwarming story that I needed for this day.
And I am crying.
But I also think it's good to show, you know, and it's good to show the haters, like, no, when you stand on the right side of history, when you are inclusive, when you see people, and when you're in Texas and you shout out, like, yay, happy pride, you know, that you're gonna win in the end, because hashtag love wins. But also, F the haters. They're always gonna lose. And I think it's important. Even such a small story like this sends a huge message. Because once again, these are the kinds of things that right wingers love. Oh my God, if there's a baker that doesn't wanna bake a cake for a gay couple, oh my God, put them on a pedestal, you know? So hey, guess what? We can play the same game too. People who actually celebrate celebrate gay rights, celebrate diversity, and celebrate actually people living their truths and loving who they wanna love, baby.
Yeah, and this is how it should work. Support the businesses you like, and if some conservative doesn't like it, then don't buy their cookies. I haven't had their cookies, they look great. I don't know for sure, but this is how it should work. Don't try to cancel them, support them if you want to, don't support them if you don't want to. This works for me. And thank you to everybody who supported the business, and hope that they're doing a little bit better. That said, that is all the time that we have for our first 90-minute experiment. I think we can all agree, perfectly smooth. Nobody has a problem with anything. So we're gonna continue to iterate and all that, and we'll talk about some things. I have some questions that hopefully the audience will help me with. But anyway, the most important thing is that Dr. Rashad Ritchie's Indisputable is coming up next. We've had a lot of fun, but the show continues. The news and analysis continues. Dr. Rashad Ritchie's 8-week run on the TYT network begins in just a few minutes. So definitely stay tuned for that. YouTube.com/IndisputableTYT, Twitch.tv/TYT. Gonna be awesome. Please show some support for Rashad. He's absolutely the best. Francesca, thank you as always for being here on Monday. Thank you, John. Appreciate you. Thank you. And for all of you, stay tuned. It's coming up in just a few. There's a lot that we don't yet know about what's gonna happen with Donald Trump over the next year or two. Is he actually going to eventually run for president once again? Is he going to potentially face legal charges in the investigations that are facing him? Could he, as a result of those charges, end up behind bars? And if one of those things happened, would it actually stop the other from going forward? You'd expect so. You can't have a president behind bars, right? Or can you? Apparently, a case can be made. And joining us now is a journalist who spoke with some legal experts about the possibility that Donald Trump could serve as president from prison. We're joined by policy correspondent for Insider, Robin Brevender. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Very glad to have you on. So before we get into some of the legal specifics, what was it that led for you and your co-author on this piece to consider this as an option, something to look into?
Yeah, it's interesting. We talked to legal experts about this, and a lot of them told us we were jumping the gun, but then they said, you know, we've had a crazier things that we thought would never happen, so worth considering. This came from a conversation we had had last year about whether the Secret Service might be responsible for removing Trump from the White House, if it came to that. It didn't come to that, of course, but then we started talking about, well, would the Secret Service follow him to prison if he went there, and found out the answer was yes. So then we wondered if he could run again if he ultimately is in prison, which is of course very hypothetical at this point.
Hold on for one second. When you say that they would follow him there, if he were to be sent to prison, he would continue to have Secret Service guards?
Absolutely. That's the takeaway from former Secret Service agents we talked to. He's the former president, he's entitled to lifetime Secret Service benefits.
Wow, that is amazing. Okay, well, look, I guess that's not the most shocking part of this, but I would assume one of the reasons the legal experts thought that you might be jumping the gun is most sane people, but sane people who haven't really paid attention to politics for the past few years, would assume that were he to go to prison, he wouldn't win the nomination. Really fast, obviously, you take it as a possibility that that might happen for the rest of this to be possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, he wouldn't be the first person running for president from prison. We looked back in the history books, and Eugene Debs ran from prison for the Socialist Party in 1920. Lyndon LaRouche ran in the 90s. So certainly possible to run from prison. And then the legal experts we talked to said, theoretically, he could govern from prison too. The only real constitutional requirements, you have to take the oath of office. That could be done anywhere. And he has to periodically address Congress. So one of the professors we talked to suggested he could do that from Zoom, wearing an orange jumpsuit in a prison cell.
And obviously, there is nothing stopping someone who is currently serving time from running. Is it possible that in advance of that, some law could be passed, some executive order, but even then, there would be a question of its constitutionality?
Yeah, anything like that would certainly go to court. Professors think that that's very legally dubious. Really, it would probably take a constitutional amendment, which, as we all know, is really hard to do.
Mm-hmm. And so, okay, let's say he's allowed to. Okay, he can campaign behind bars, he can theoretically get elected behind bars. It's America, craziest things have happened. Once he's president, wouldn't he have quite a bit of power to change his own legal situation, his own housing situation?
Yeah, absolutely. One possibility that was brought up, if he's in a federal prison, he would be in charge of the Bureau of Prisons. So he could theoretically designate the White House as a prison for himself. So a lot of opportunity for him to change things. He could try to pardon himself. There were a lot of questions about whether he might pardon himself before he left office last time. So if he's in a federal prison, he could try to pardon himself this time around, which is also legally dubious, but the courts would have to work that out. If he's in a state prison, if it's a different story, and he might be at the mercy of a governor of whatever state he's imprisoned in, or the parole board there to try to pardon him.
Yeah, I get that you're saying it's legally dubious, although I guess it would be about as legally dubious as preemptively pardoning himself for things he hasn't yet been charged with, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All of this is so fun. Okay, well, I guess finally, for the legal experts that you talked to the extent that they express this, and to the extent that you would like to express this, how likely is any of this actually happening? Do you believe that the Republican Party would go along with this, that the voters would support him in a Republican primary were he to campaign from behind bars and to be elected? Does this seem within the realm of possible for you and for the experts you talk to?
Likely, certainly not. But you know, I talked to someone who said we're going down in sort of cuckoo land. And then after a minute, he was like, you know, we've seen crazier things. I'm not gonna rule it out. So likely no, but possible, yes.
Okay, well, look, I'm glad that you're doing this work and that we get to have this talk far in advance of it, because above all else, I want my audience to be prepared for what might be coming. And you know what, after the past few years, why not this too? Why won't this be the next chapter? Anyway, Robin Brevender, really appreciate your work and for joining us on the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.